Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report Under Lockdown. Now, I will grant you, it's Thursday. Still, let's pretend for a bit. Let's party like it's Friday by inviting on Brett Ehrlich of the Happy Half Hour.
What? So here's the fact that I realized today. You can hear me, right? Because I muted and unmuted.
I can.
fact about me, John, is it used to be that I was on Fridays every day, and it used to be, well, that I, every week, and it used to be that I shot Happy Half Hour on Thursday afternoon. So it was the case back pre-corona that I was always hungover on your show, but lately we've been shooting on Wednesday nights. So now, if you need someone to fill Thursday, we are back to getting hungover Brett on your show, which I think is a victory, not just for all humankind, but there's got to be aliens out there going, yep.
Aliens here from the Herald and Modiverse. Who was on the taping of the Happy Affair?
My wife, a.k.a. the Brooke Marks, a.k.a. woman contractually obligated to agree with me on stuff and occasionally help pay the rent around here.
Exactly.
Badang.
And that episode will be coming out tomorrow. Any particular topics you want to tease us with that were discussed on the episode?
Globe-shotting. So we do stories from around the world. We talk about CGI sex scenes to avoid coronavirus.
Oh,
and also the failure of the United States to beat Netflix when trying to trademark Space Force.
Oh, yes.
So Space Force is owned by Netflix everywhere but America. And who knows, maybe they'll get that American one soon. Yeah.
And I know that both of you were big fans of The Office. Is there initial impressions of Space Force included?
She watched more of it than I did. I liked it. Okay. It's just like, unfortunately, what ends up happening in these situations is comedies end with some kind of humanity and usually a wedding and a jig, I believe, in the classic sense. And what ends up happening with these things is I am certain that at the end you'll be like, yeah, this Space Force is not a waste of money because it's Steve Carell who, you know, can take a character like Michael Scott and make him lovable against all odds.
Yeah.
So that's the creepy thing about it that I'm afraid will happen. But so far it's really, really, really good.
It is. I did enjoy it. One criticism I thought was interesting of it was that the show needs to decide whether he's competent or not. But I don't think that that's necessarily true. I mean, Michael Scott occasionally was very good at his job and then occasionally was horrendous, and it worked. Anyway, if you'd like more talk about Space Force, you can watch the episode of Happy Half Hour tomorrow. Also, you can watch this because we're just doing Space Force for the rest of the hour.
That's
no, we can't do that. We should probably turn into the news. But everyone who's already joined us in the chat, thank you so much for being here. Please hit that like button. You can send us comments and tweets and super chat. And we're also on Twitch, so you can leave those messages as well. Producers are combing through them to let me know. I will also say that there will still be a Garbage People tomorrow. Anna Kasparian will be doing that. The poll is up on the community tab of the Damage Report YouTube channel. I think there was 1,400 suggestions for who should be on there. You can vote for your choice for the community Garbage People pick of the week. And we will reveal that tomorrow. But before we can get there, we gotta wade through the swamp that is the news. So let's do that. The National Guard's deployment against protesters in multiple cities has caused significant issues, both for protesters and also for the National Guard. And in particular, of course, the deployment against the protesters in D.C. just a couple of weeks ago. Well, we're finding out more about how exactly that situation came about. And there are some incredibly scary details here. So first, senior army leaders, apparently in an effort to prevent what they feared would be a calamitous outcome if President Trump ordered combat troops from the 82nd Airborne Division holding just outside city limits to the streets in anticipation of that DC clearing, leaned heavily on the Guard to carry out aggressive tactics to prove it could do the job without active duty forces. So Trump was freaking out. He wanted something done, and there were already people in the Republican Party pushing for the 82nd to be deployed, including Tom Cotton, I believe. And so apparently to ward that off, they decided to suggest the use of the National Guard, which they found to be not good, but preferable to just having, you know, actual U.S. troops rampaging through the streets of D.C.
To prove it could do the job already reeks of the pitch job they had to do to get to Trump to not deploy the military. I'm not, or the like active duty troops over their troops as opposed to the National Guard. And I'm not convinced that he would know the difference, to be honest.
If they
And
just told him they were from the 82nd, he would probably buy that.
because there's got to be some kind of bloodthirsty hawkishness in all generals, right? It's like I'm a, you know, or people who are in charge of the military, but there also is like a shared understanding of what people call them out for wanting to do, and an understanding that like, all right, that might be a bridge too far, and all of those bridges too far were like the Trump is already like crossing them when they're saying, okay, let's at least as a compromise deploy people who look like active duty military to these places so that we don't send active duty military out there.
Yes. Greed. Like the ridiculous thing is, in the same way that we did a story earlier this week about how the Trump campaign was running $400,000 worth of ads in DC so that Trump would see them on TV, it's like the military is being deployed to placate not like Trump's base, which wants to feel like he's taking control, but Trump himself. Such a weird way to run a country, a country that purports to be important.
And just a real quick discussion of competency. Like Trump, I would kind of understand. I would not respect, and I would be still frustrated, but I would understand if he doesn't understand the difference between two kinds of forces, right? National Guard and 82nd Airborne or whatever. But Trump himself is a television guy. He's a television star, and for him to not understand how television works, where you can hear him go like, how come it's not running on Fox? How come it's not running on Fox? And people, rather than explain to him, hey Donald, we don't run him here because we're going to lose here. We want to run him in effective places, and him saying, no, spam the airwaves because it's not on Fox. And them going, rather than saying, oh God, thank God that they only deployed the National Guard
Yes,
in
it
this
could have
situation, as
been.
opposed to deploying the airborne, which is the equivalent of running those ads on his airwaves for no reason where they should absolutely not be.
Or for a reason, but the reason being that he is 100% incompetent, irrational, emotional, and that is demonstrated both before and after the clearing of those streets of DC. So let's talk about the impetus for this. Mr. Trump was enraged by news reports that he had been moved on Friday night to a White House bunker because of the protests. He was alarmed and unsettled, read terrified. So he was scared of what was going on. He was scared of the perception of him being scared. And so he wanted something done. He wanted to dominate the streets. And so they did what they did. And we're going to show you in a minute how close it came to potentially a far higher death toll, because of course the National Guard did end up taking one life, although not in DC. But take a look at just this morning, Trump's continued perception of the National Guard. He had this to say: our great National Guard troops who took care of the area around the White House could hardly believe how easy it was. A walk in the park, one said. The protesters, agitators, anarchists, Antifa, and others were handled very easily by the Guard, DC police, and SS. Great job.
Secret Service,
See,
SS,
it's
say
a
Secret Service. You don't want to say SS, but
it
do
is the
you? But
secret
do you want to say the SS?
it's the Secret Service, I imagine.
Or
So he's
the German SS?
So he spoke with a soldier from the National Guard who said it was a walk in the park. I'll bet every single dollar I have that conversation didn't happen. But look at that. So they deploy thousands of National Guard troops to tear gas out peaceful protesters, and the country freaks out. Like, what are you doing? How is this justified? This show of violence against peaceful protesters. And his reaction is, it was so easy to take them out. And it's not just weird that
Yes,
he's
they were
like,
just people.
yeah, they're
They
just
were
people, they
just
didn't have
people, and you
weapons.
shot tear
It
gas
should
at
be.
people. Like, what? Yes, it was a walk, and it was more of a scurry in a park, a
Shouldn't it
frightened
be?
panic in the park,
It was more of
because
like
they were getting shot at.
Shakespeare in the park. So here's the thing. It's that interesting,
No, just
like,
spear in the park.
spear in the. Yes. So here's the weird thing. It's anarchists and Antifa, and they're violent and they're dangerous. They're so dangerous that if we don't dominate the streets, they're going to take out everything. These Dem governors are bowing down to them. They're taking over our cities. Also, super easy walk in the park to disperse them. It's the easiest thing in the world.
But also it's all those things. And then also the implied low expectations for his own ability to do something that simple. Right? Mm-hmm. He's like claiming victory for something that anyone would look at and say like, wait, yeah, if you send the National Guard in to people who are holding not shields, but signs, they were holding cardboard graffitied shields. Mm-hmm. If you claim that too hard, you're admitting that you think you suck at this.
You
right?
expected like you to think, suck.
You expected it to be difficult. Of course, it's not going to be difficult. Only someone like Trump would think that that would be a difficult operation, sending disproportionate force into a crowd of peaceful protesters mm-hmm. who had every right to be there. Yeah. And then not only gassing the people who were standing there, but also the people affiliated with the church who didn't know about it, who then were angry that you used them as a prop.
Yep. Yep.
It's all a nightmare.
And it's this weird thing. They need to present it as this, like, it's like world. It's like Churchill surveying the damage they said. And they said that Trump's, it was a display of bravery to walk to that church. But wait, but it was, I thought it was super easy. It was just clear them out. Which is it? Which is it? Is he walking
things.
Amongst the rubble, or was it super easy? It's all things at all times, because
his entire strategy or tactics for everything is like that. Mm-hmm. It's just throw as much gas and confusion at it to get people to either take cover who are on the other side of it and be confused and create a fog of war and embolden the people who you are on the side of. And that's it. We need to talk about a relatively new show called Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of Un-F-ing the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
So the Trump administration decided they needed the National Guard to clear out peaceful protesters. And so the call went out to states, send us your troops. And some Republican governors apparently did. But they didn't just send troops. Along with the troops, National Guard units from other states brought weapons and ammunition. Tens of thousands of rifle and pistol rounds were stored in the DC armory and partitioned in pallets labeled by their state of origin to be used on American citizens in case of emergency. And of course, in at least Louisville, they were used on American citizens. Now, thankfully, in DC, it didn't come to the use of live ammunition to massacre peaceful protesters, but the plan was set up, ready to go, if they felt they needed to start firing on these protesters. They were ready with tens of thousands of rounds of ammunition.
There's some audio that auto-played when I was reading this article, and from the New York Times, Gibbons, Neff, and others, where it was someone affiliated with the National Guard organization who referred to these events in within the space of 15 to 20 seconds as the Alamo, D-Day, and the Super Bowl. Just how horny they were for it. Just like, wow. Let's get in there. Oh. And then you are characterizing those defending Americans, the protesters, exercising their First Amendment rights as people trying to storm the Alamo. If they were storming the Alamo, I think they would have probably tried to get inside it ever. And those people that you went after in freaking DC were just standing there, bud.
They were standing there. Some were singing.
And oh yeah, that's right.
Reports of a guitar.
Live. Maybe they thought it was like the Alamo Draft House, and there was a performance.
If you can go, it's great. I definitely recommend it. Yeah, and so, look, thankfully it didn't come to that. That's what we were worried of at the time, but the National Guard is still deployed in multiple cities, and so, you know, God only knows, Trump's going to be giving that racial unity speech on Juneteenth in Tulsa.
Tulsa, where a major in the police department said that they should be killing more black people, mathematically speaking.
They ought to.
They ought to kill more black people. Then said that Tamir Rice was an armed robber, and all other kinds of things.
And said that George Zimmerman was the prototypical case for what the left wants policing to look like.
Yeah, so that's and then be also, something. And not to mention like what they call the race riots, which really was just massacre. The massacre in Tulsa, like
it was a bombing and massacre. That's all it was.
So that's where he chose to have it.
Yeah,
he's choosing to have his Juneteenth emancipation speech about race relations in a place famous. I mean, not even famous enough relative to what happened there, but famous for a bunch of white people going in and killing a bunch of black people who had made it. Because they'd done well for themselves.
Yeah.
That was what was so unacceptable. That's where Trump is choosing to have his race relations speech written by racist extremist Stephen Miller.
Stephen Miller. Yeah. The only question at this point, is it going to be like, are we going to be live tweeting it during the speech, reacting in real time to horrendous calls to further violence? Or will we find out that the iambic pentameter of the speech was designed to perfectly mimic a Hitler speech? Like, is it going to be the obvious stuff, or is it going to be, oh no, every sentence was 14 words coincidentally, one of those things?
Is he going to be shooting blank verse?
Exactly. I don't know, but it's going to be one of those two things. Stephen Miller is not going to rise to the, you know, occasion on this thing. It's going to be explicit, or it's going to be a little bit between the lines, but it is going to be some scary stuff.
It will have some scary stuff in it, no doubt. But then my favorite thing about Stephen Miller's speech is he's also a bad writer. So it's, I don't know if anyone watched that episode of Friends where Joey tries to give he tries to give his best man speech. And it's just like, and loving and caring and having and holding and loving while caring and having and holding. It's just such tripe, cliche, empty rhetoric nonsense that doesn't have anyone delivering it. Like, Obama could give any speech and it would be inspiring. Trump doesn't have that skill. It will just read as the tripe it is written as.
Yeah. One final thing. I just want to quickly mention this about, you know, because I mentioned that not only were people worried, obviously, about the violence that the National Guard was used, but people in the National Guard, I guess one spoke to Trump and said it was a walk in the park, I guess. But others are saying that they have significant issues with the way they're being used. They say that they're demoralized and exhausted. These are DC Guard members interviewed by the New York Times. More than 60% are people of color themselves. One soldier said he and some fellow troops were so ashamed in taking part against the protests that they've kept it from family members. They're not revealing what they were deployed to do. I have a feeling their family could probably figure it out, but...
Well, one guy said that he reported that he could see his cousin in the protest, and he has to do that. And there's one video that everybody should go watch. It's a guardsman in Long Beach, California, who is talking to protesters, and he's like, listen, I'm, you know, you don't think that they come after me when I don't have this this uniform on? They do the same thing to me. I am we're your neighbors. We are people who are just trying. He's like, I play junior college football, and this is how I can get bias by joining the National Guard. And he's like, I am with you. I'm here to protect you. And what sucks is that they're using me as a way to call the people I am rioters and violent Antifa.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure many people saw the viral video of the, I believe it was a National Guardsman, but he was black, and as a chant was going on, someone zoomed in on his face, and he was mouthing along to the "I'm black and I'm proud," and it just kills you. I mean, that they're being deployed, and obviously, look, they could hypothetically just refuse to follow the orders and go immediately to jail, but that's what would happen. Anyway, so yeah, just a complete mess. All of it avoidable. None of this had to happen. Absolutely none of this. Donald Trump, again, lashed out emotionally because he can't, because he's emotional and because he can't stop watching TV. Those are the sources of most of the problems in his life. For all that he's been given, all that the bad that happens to him is because he's a stupid, incurious, emotional person who never stops watching cable TV.
There's another video everyone should watch of Trump sitting there while his, like, press sergeant at arms is like, "That's it, everybody, get out!" And you just hear her yell, like, "Get out, get out, get out," to clear everybody out of the room. And Trump's just sitting there like, "I don't think anything I'm doing is working. Not going to stop doing it," but it's like a demoralized, sad, looking different Trump.
Good. Well, that makes me feel temporarily better. Donald Trump and his followers have been waging war against the protests going on, calling them illegitimate, denying they understand what they're actually about, trying to have people across the country see these protests as fundamentally domestic terrorists. Just yesterday, he tweeted that the Seattle protesters are domestic terrorists. The thing is, so far, it doesn't really seem to be working, because the movement he's going up against is far more popular than he himself is. In a recent poll, 53% of Americans support Black Lives Matter, only 25% oppose it. That has increased 12 points since mid-April. So in less than 2 months, it has shot up significantly. By a double-digit margin, BLM is more popular than either Donald Trump or Joe Biden. Although in their defense, BLM is apparently the single most favorably viewed national political organization or politician in America right now, at least as of this poll. More popular than any individual Democrat or Republican, a point more popular than Obama, more popular than the parties themselves, the Tea Party, all of that, and certainly more popular than Donald Trump. That's what he's going up against at this point.
And still only at 53%.
Well, it's America. And after all, they're saying something very controversial, like, "Please stop killing black people." That is divisive in 2020.
Though, I hate to say it, in Los Angeles, they did choose a district attorney candidate who is the reason that Kaepernick started kneeling. Mm-hmm. That's all I gotta say.
Like, yeah.
Prosecuted zero killer cops in San Francisco and is collecting a police pension and was a former head of. So, but I don't put that on the largest Black Lives Matter movement. I put that on some pretty weird decision making. But by and large, a lot of people are just saying, yeah, they do matter. Mm-hmm. Is that controversial? And so there's a lot of, and that's what it means to people by and large, is, do you think that Black Lives Matter? And the argument trying to be made by the Trump or administration and others is, no, this is Antifa. They are all Antifa. Yeah. And that message is failing.
Yeah, well, a few different things. So one is, it's not BLM, it's Antifa, or whatever. It's radical leftists, or whatever. Trying to say it's something other than what it is. But even, like, this is sort of their second big national go up against BLM. In the first, like, Black Lives Matter is such an obviously non-controversial thing to say, that if you are part of a party that is literally bragging when your candidate gets 8% of the black vote, wouldn't you just say it? But they responded with, all lives matter.
How about just a compromise?
What the response
was. How about just a compromise between those two sides? And everyone, they need to say all black lives matter.
That's probably fine.
All black lives matter.
But look, to some extent we're joking around, but it's also a serious question. Why didn't they just say it?
Well, I'm happy to know that it's easy to find racists. Like, that's the reason people
You're saying
don't.
That they will identify themselves effectively?
Yeah. That's it. It's so easy to do.
It would have been so simple. Like,
But it's like when people say all lives matter, it's like when people say, like, well, the Civil War, there were people in the North who were trying to ruin the Southern economy. That was part of the people say that they like try. They think they're just like getting you on some kind of semantic discussion. But it's like, all right, so go on with your argument. I guarantee it's not going to end with and slavery is bad, you know, and we should stop being racist. Like when you start with all lives matter and then you start discussing things, you're trying to eventually say, even though your first words were all lives matter, which would include black lives, by the end, you're just like, but no, they don't. So yeah, it's easy for me to identify them.
And think about, in terms of messaging, like, I'm gonna be charitable to the right and say that they are at least hypothetically, like, they want to appeal to non-white voters. They don't want to do anything to get it, but they want them to be wanted by those voters. And so they had this opportunity to admit that this brutality is obviously unacceptable, and they declined to do that with All Lives Matter and now attacking the people protesting the streets as terrorists. And so what have they come up with as an alternative? Like, their best thinkers online, Charlie Kirk tweeted, "The Republicans freed the slaves."
And by God, that's... Charlie Kirk will not rest until he gets them all back in chains.
Exactly, that's a good tweet. But, okay, I get it. I think everyone watching the show understands some of the things historically that have shifted a bit since then. And their other guy, Ryan Fournier, was like, the first, I think, dozen or two dozen black congressmen were all Republicans. Again, because the political realignment hadn't happened yet. Like, it's like, how does that seem to you to be a strong point? I honestly, I think that Charlie Kirk is an idiot, but I think that he's smart enough that he must know that black Americans aren't reading that and thinking, oh, good point, let's switch. I think it is just a thing you say to reassure some white voters that you're sort of on it.
But there's a difference between all lives matter and this is going to sound really terrible, but it's simply a rhetorical messaging point. There's a difference between all lives matter and defund the police. If you don't know what someone's talking about and they say that all lives matter, your first reaction is, well, of course they do. If you don't know anything about it. And that is where people first meet. A lot of people first meet the concept. Finding a term that is that seemingly reasonable people would agree with. It is charged and horrible, the reason they came up with it and what they're trying to do. It's also like death tax. Like death, I don't want to pay a death tax. I want to pay a tax for dying. Defund the police is the opposite of that. Defund the police, while it is engaging, people are like, what are you talking about? What? Their first reaction to it is, why? What? What are we without? If police don't have any money, how do we have police? It's going to be anarchy. Now, everything that people say afterwards is a great reason. And I love all those tiles that people are sharing on Instagram. They're saying this is exactly what they mean. But when folks are calling out like the term defund the police as opposed to a people's budget, I want a people's budget. Mm-hmm. I want a budget by the people for the people, messaging like, I don't want to keep paying taxes so that people die. I don't want to pay people to kill black folks. Mm-hmm. That's a different message. That's something that immediately you can get behind. That's the subtle difference. I went on Crystal Ball's Instagram when she was trying to make the opposite of this point. And I was like, it's like, remember when Tobias is an analyst and a therapist and he put the term analrapist on his card? Like,
I can't wait to see where you're going.
I know what he's saying. Because I know that he's both an analyst and a therapist. Mm-hmm. But if I just saw that without any context first in encountering it, I would be like, oh my goodness, you are a psycho. Like what? Because it says anal rapist. Like that's what it says. And that is an extreme version of what's happening there. Now, that said, I will do my job of advocating for the changes in funding of police departments to increase public safety and stop funding a police state. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we've got that term out there. We're going to do the good work of communicating what it means. That's the only mm-hmm. point that I would like to make about like coming up with terms like that and how when those very same people complain, when the very same Democrat left, or not Democrats even, but like far, like left leaning on the political spectrum people complain about Democrats coming up with stupid messaging that isn't as effective as Republicans, mm-hmm. then you fall victim to the same thing where you have messaging that isn't as effective as Republicans, because Republicans start with a term that is impossible for reasonable people to disagree with.
Maybe. Look, I think I understand what you're saying. I do think that we have to bear in mind the context where to the extent that people will ever be focused on this topic, now is when they're focused on it. If it is a difficult conversation to have to explain all of what's encapsulated by that term, at least now is the best time to have that, because people are actually paying attention to it. They do largely lean towards that group, and the opposition right now is coming across like a bunch of fascist ghouls. So they certainly have that on their side. And
but
I also
not
think it's
just
a
the proponents and the opposition. The point of my statement is to say that there's people who are
again,
like, wait, what?
No, Brett, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying those are two contextual things that will play into how the conversation will play out. And also, I think to some extent, it's a bargaining thing. It's like, what's your starting position? We often say that Democrats often go into these sorts of fights already having a center-right position, then it only drifts right from there.
But that's not what I'm saying either. Because I'm not saying the position needs to be any different.
I get that.
It's just now... Now I feel like an idiot because, I wasn't the person who I respect way more people trying to get a message like defund the police out than someone who isn't trying to do anything and someone who's advocating for different goals, more moderate goals. Mm-hmm. I hope that came across. It's just if we're having the discussion about the term defund the police and as it relates to Black Lives Matter being a great being that great messaging, like that is great. Is Michael Che's like matters. It's just matters. That's the word. And that's brilliant. And it starts there. And behind it is so much more and so much and has unlocked such a necessary advocating of solutions and has gotten people behind it. It has been successful. Yeah. And I do understand and respect that defund the police is an attempt to take that next step to make material changes to police departments across the country to make it so that they stop doing this thing that is so terrible. These many things that date back to pre-Civil War that are so terrible.
And as you alluded to, we will see how it plays out. We as journalists, people who try to educate people about what's going on, will make sure that people know. That's the contribution we can make. It's easy to forget if you just pay attention to the rhetoric coming out of the White House, but we're still very much in a pandemic. And the reason I say that is because the way that Trump talks about it, when he talks about it at all, is like this, which he said on last Friday. We want the continued blanket lockdown to end for the states. We may have some embers or some ashes, or we may have some flames coming, but we'll put them out. We'll stomp them out. So that makes it sound as if this is effectively done. Maybe a little bit will come in the future. Maybe a good bit will come in the future, but we're good now. You understand, in America right now, today, 2 million people have contracted the virus that have been tracked. We've already passed 115,000 deaths. Close to 1,000 people are still dying every day. People aren't really talking about this. And when they do, they use that rhetoric. But I want you to bear in mind how long Donald Trump has been done with this thing. So you might recall this statement. We have met the moment and we have prevailed. That was Donald Trump's mission accomplished moment that he said on May 11th. Since he said that, more than 30,000 confirmed deaths in America from coronavirus have happened. If 30,000 had been the entirety of it, that would be a national tragedy that we would remember for the rest of our lives. That's been since he declared mission accomplished. And I'm going to give Brett a chance to jump in, but you probably know what's coming. We've got some really bad news around the coronavirus that we're going to delve into in just a second.
It's going to get so much worse, man. It's going to get so much worse. And I'm not saying people shouldn't be in the streets right now, but like there are millions of people touching each other outside right now. It's going to get so much worse.
I mean, look, I will say what I've been. So I have a little bit on that, but I will also say as I've been watching these videos, there is a very diligent commitment to mask wearing. To some extent, it's probably nice when police are surveilling you to be able to wear a mask at all, but there has been a lot. Now, that's not going to stop all the spread, but it is going to limit to some extent.
I mean, okay.
Okay, well, why don't I delve into some of the numbers, because we do have a bit specifically on the concern that you're raising right there.
I don't have a solution. I'm just saying.
No, we're going to fix it together. Okay, so what do we have recently? Well, we have a leaked Centers for Disease Control and Prevention document. It's listed the U.S. as the worst of 10 countries trying to fight major coronavirus outbreaks. Not in March or in April or even in May. We're talking about just days ago. The document showed that between June 6th and June 9th, new COVID-19 infections in the U.S. jumped 36.5% from the average number of new cases, a significant jump all in the last week. That's nationally. Texas health authorities on Wednesday released data showing that 2,153 people are currently hospitalized with the novel coronavirus, marking the third straight day it has reported record number of COVID-19 hospitalizations in the state. Not record for June. Record. And they're breaking the record day after day. And again, this isn't just tests, because if you were testing a lot of people, but people weren't seriously ill, those numbers could go up, but it doesn't necessarily mean the apocalypse is coming. This is hospitalizations for coronavirus in the last week.
Yeah. They opened the cities and the states, and more people are getting it now. And there are more people in protests outside with each other. I'm glad the protests are outside. I'm glad people are wearing masks. It's just, this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. This is the obvious conclusion of the behaviors that people have engaged in. And what Trump is going to cross his fingers about is two things. One, he can blame protesters. But he loses that argument when he starts having rallies again, which start happening.
Which soon. Is happening tomorrow.
Tomorrow he's going to start having rallies again. So everyone is kind of, you know, still in other ways protecting themselves. But like, this is happening. He's going to cross his fingers and hope that this narrative that I see emerging, which is, listen, it was all people in nursing homes. There were some units there's buildings in major cities that aren't self-contained, so they share ventilation systems. That's what it was. And then he's going to hope it just cancels out and he's going to move ahead. And the only other thing he's going to hope for is that we can have the same problems with voting in November that we had 2 days ago in Georgia, which will benefit him, because of course they will. When people have to wait 12 hours to vote, the only silver lining is people are out of a job, so they don't really have anywhere else to go.
Yeah, that's a dark silver lining.
But at least they'll get sick.
Yeah.
What? Like, that's what it's about. And it's a concerted effort.
Yeah. Look, I want to give you some more updates on... No, it's not.
It's so bad.
We got more bad stuff.
Everything's so bad.
Brett, hold on to your butts. Okay? So, we're going to give you some more numbers on what's going up and what's not. So, as to what is causing it, look, I have no doubt that at some point, new infections will be traced back to protests. I will say that while that is almost certainly going to happen, it is still a little bit early to be able to show that. And so far, what we're seeing apparently is not being driven by that just yet. The Kaiser Family Foundation reported on Wednesday that the number of new infections in Texas, Utah, and Arizona, three of the states that are seeing the biggest rises recently, began to tick upward on May 27th, just after Memorial Day weekend and before protests gained momentum. The protests have been going on for some time, but we're still at a fairly early date to be able to say that people had the time to contract the virus, become symptomatic, and then spread it to more people, which is where you see the explosion. That could hypothetically happen, but we also had, by the way,
virus, spread it to more people, and become symptomatic.
Yes, exactly. Because you can't contract it and then spread it instantaneously. Yes. But remember, like a month before the protests even began, we had the reopenings initially in some states. Not necessarily full, but Texas, by the way, is one of the states that opened up most fully earliest. Now, let's say it's not just Texas, though. You have, Arizona. 3 weeks after the governor lifted the stay-at-home order, coronavirus is making a comeback with their hospitals apparently at 83% capacity already. You have Arizona's daily new reported cases increasing by 211% over the past 2 weeks to nearly 30,000 total cases. We could go through many state-by-state analyses like this. And look, there are some states that are doing better. There are some states that are sort of holding steady. Some states we don't necessarily trust the numbers from, but there are those already that are looking like they're going to be hot spots for the virus. And my fear is that we will do what we did the first time. We will wait too long to do anything about this. And thankfully, we have people in office who understand that you need to learn from the past. People like Donald Trump, who tweeted today,
"Those that deny their history are doomed to repeat it."
I assume he's talking about coronavirus. I assume. Yeah. Maybe not.
But when you assume, your president's an ass.
Exactly. I'm...
You? Meh.
I'm worried. California's looking okay. It has had a rise. It's not one of the worst states, but Florida is looking rough. It's looking like the nursing homes are once again. Nobody's even talking about it, man. That's the most frustrating thing. And, like, I can bring it up, and I sort of get it. I think that the audiences have moved on, so the news doesn't think that it's... Like, let's see how many people watch this video. I tweeted about the fact that 30,000 people have died since he said that. And, like, the reaction was mostly, but, like, 1,000 people are dying. Remember,
I'll tell you
remember when we were all freaked out because 1,000 people were dying? Well, right now, 1,000 people are dying. Why aren't we freaked out?
You killed 100,000 people? You must get up very early in the morning.
Exactly. I don't understand it. We're acting like this thing is over. This isn't even the second wave. This is the second wave. Equilibrium. No, maybe the beginning, but I'm saying the fear is that it will jump back up to, you know, 2,500, 3,500 people dying in a day.
St. Louis, or what I think it was St. Louis, they had the parade, one parade.
Yeah.
This wasn't a parade and people in restaurants and people at Trump rallies.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. It's just the freakish muscle of normalization.
Yeah.
That's it.
You saw that Vegas video, right?
Oh, yeah. I saw the Vegas stories ahead of time where they showed, like, bulletproof glass around different stations at the roulette table, or the craps table, I guess. Not even the craps table. Like, it couldn't even be the craps table. Couldn't be roulette. It would have to be something like, because those are all community. Mm-hmm. It had to be blackjack tables where, like, they slide in. And I saw that. And then I saw the Cosmo where everyone was doing the same thing, crossing my fingers, praying to God for HEPA filters. Mm-hmm. And, like, there was someone behind the dealers have masks on.
Yeah. And that's, like, it. Yeah, we each live in a different world. Like, maybe hypothetically, my gym might be opening on Friday. I don't know if it will, but it's going to be reduced capacity, temperature checks before you go in, things get wiped down after every person uses it. And I'm thinking, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. And meanwhile, it's Vegas and it's like, yeah, partied up crowds passing, like, it's like, why am I being responsible?
People were drinking, though. That's what I felt in high school when people were drinking.
Yeah?
I was like, oh, well, you guys do seem to be having a good time, but I'm being responsible.
That's true. I don't know, man. It's crazy. Okay, well, we got a lot of other stuff.
I would say go use the stairs in Torrance to go work out, but COVID Karen and Torrance, or Corona Karen, or whatever, Torrance Karen, SoCal Karen. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen that video yet.
No.
I'll send it to you. No. Everyone watched.
Although I did see... When I noticed I saw the John Krasinski's canceled party hashtag, and I saw someone tweeting about, I know which Karen ratted him out, and it was a photo of Karen from The Office. J.K. Rowling has spent this week in first tweet form and then in online essay form defending her continued attacks against the trans community. I will say they're attacks because they're attacks. She says that she is showing empathy in the way that she knows how, but is continuing this crusade while so much else is going on. I don't understand it. But what I do like about the entire thing, and we've shown you can see our other videos if you want to see what she has said about this community, but many of the most notable actors who have come out of the Harry Potter franchises are significantly distancing themselves from J.K. Rowling. First, I am very glad to report that Emma Watson, who has been previously involved in, you know, elevating trans activists and things like that, she tweeted, "Trans people are who they say they are and deserve to live their lives without being constantly questioned or told they aren't who they say they are." She went on to say, "I want my trans followers to know that I and so many other people around the world see you, respect you, and love you for who you are. Happy Pride, sending love." It's a very simple thing to say. Shows empathy. Caring about these people are so often the targets of discrimination, violence, and even murder. But that's what she said. Daniel Radcliffe also had put out a statement saying, I realize that certain press outlets will probably want to paint this as infighting between J.K. Rowling and myself, but that is really not what this is about, nor is it what's important right now. While Joe is unquestionably responsible for the course my life has taken, as someone who's been honored to work with and continues to contribute to the Trevor Project for the last decade, and just as a human being, I feel compelled to say something at this moment. Transgender women are women. Any statement of the contrary erases the identity and dignity of transgender people and goes against all advice given by professional healthcare associations who have far more expertise on this subject matter than either Joe or I.
Avada Kedavra.
That's not.
Is that what it is?
It's Avada.
Wingardium Leviosa. I don't know, John. I forget which Star Trek episode that's from.
Obliviate. Just want you done. Anyway, Star Trek. Oh my God. Okay, I was gonna let you weigh in, but no, I'm gonna turn to Eddie Redmayne, star of Fantastic Beasts, who said, "Shut up." As someone who has worked with both J.K. Rowling and members of the trans community, I wanted to make it absolutely clear where I stand. I disagree with Joe's comments. Trans women are women, trans men are men, and non-binary identities are valid. I would never want to speak on behalf of the community, but I do know that my dear transgender friends and colleagues are tired of this constant questioning of their identities, which all too often results in violence and abuse. They simply want to live their lives peacefully. And it's time to let them do so. Warner Brothers also, you know, they make the movies. They put out a statement that people seem to like. I think it's incredibly weak sauce, but they have put out a statement saying they value a culture of inclusivity and diversity, and they also greatly value the work of their storytellers, which seems like a weird thing to say at the time when the storyteller is the one who's necessitating the comment, but whatever. It's put out a statement.
It's like if one person says one side of the argument and the other person says the other side of the argument, and they go, in regards to both of you, yes.
Great work. No,
agreed.
It was better. Pizza? They said they want diversity and you know all that. But anyway, look, I'm glad that they're speaking out. Like, hypothetically, if Harry Potter movies don't get made or if she has the ability to determine who's in them, it's not impossible that there could be strike back, you know. Two of the three haven't been in one in a while, but it's not impossible that they could at some point. There is some career risk to doing this, but they're doing the right thing, and I'm glad that they're doing that.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially because while this is a franchise that you apparently like to mock, I very much enjoyed it, and I think it's great that they're doing this.
It's the Magic, the Gathering. I agree with so much with Hermione and Harry and Eddie Redmayne, because I haven't seen that one yet. Mm-hmm. And that Fantastic Beast.
I haven't seen it either.
Eddie Redmayne. But I do. And it is such an easy call for me. And then when you get into like the semantics of what J.K. Rowling is talking about and how it's similar to the criticism of many of these like prevailing power dynamic discussions, the thing that J.K. Rowling thinks is being stolen from her is not being stolen from her. You can still be a woman and talk about your experience, yeah. And people that, and that's all they're asking for too.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Final question, Rupert Grint. What's up, man? Come on. I mean, he's not under any obligation, but
I don't know. As we said in a segment of Rotten Tomatoes, he got hit pretty hard by the puberty stick.
I think he's cool. Movies. I liked him in Servant. I thought he was good.
Wasn't he in the Harold and Maude remake?
Yeah, I think he might have been. I didn't see that. But I did see him in Servant, and he was pretty good. I like him. I want to see something from him. Around the country, statues of Confederate leaders and famous racists have been coming down. Not just the country, the world, indeed. And as that's going on, people have started to wonder, why do we have military bases named after Confederate leaders? Doesn't that seem a little bit weird? And so some people have said, including the Secretary of the Army and Esper, have said, you know, we're open to a conversation about potentially renaming these things. Well, not everyone supports that. There was a tweet from Jeff Mason, who is in the White House press briefing room, who said, this statement was just passed around to reporters ahead of the briefing, and we have a picture that he posted of the statement, apparently written by Trump, that says, it has been suggested that we should rename as many of 10 of our Capital L legendary military bases, such as Fort Bragg, Fort Hood, Fort Benning. These Capital M monumental and very Capital P powerful Capital B bases.
This is how I read it to the Barney Pitch meeting for TYT.
Did you?
Too. Yeah, and then I gave up and just started shouting the capitalized words. That's
okay, I'll do that. Have become part of a great American heritage and a history of winning, victory, and freedom. Because when I think winning, I think Confederacy. The United States of
America. I went to the TurboGrafx-16 school of video games.
Exactly.
Like, why are you naming it after losers? I went to the France school of war. Like, what?
Yeah. There's going to be, like, a great museum on the evolution of video technology. It's the HD DVD Museum. No,
but it would you don't even have to be the winners. But it's like, but no, it's not the museum. Museums, I get, like, we want to, I'll put it in, it belongs in a museum, maybe. Mm-hmm. But with this specifically, it's like, you should name your college after a smart person.
Mm-hmm.
You shouldn't name your college after a dumb
Somebody
person.
Failed, yeah.
That's like Trump University. That's why he wants to keep it
maybe
with these better names, because he named his place of learning after a total freaking moron,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to name his place of training troops and military strategy after a freaking loser.
Traitors and losers, effectively. But he goes on to say, the United States of America trained and deployed our heroes on these hallowed grounds. That's not how hallowed ground works, by the way. I mean, it doesn't actually mean anything, but that's not what hallowed ground is, just some base. Like, the battleground is hallowed, not the base, you idiot. He literally knows absolutely nothing about the military war, to the point where he can't even fake it. And won two world wars, therefore, my capital M administration will not even consider the renaming of these magnificent and fabled military Fabled? Our history is the greatest nation.
Remember on that military and installation, a rabbit raced a tortoise.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay, so here's the thing. That is a ridiculous statement substantively, but also, like, look at it. The weird capitalization, all of that. It's like something a crazy person or a child has scribbled out. That's not just my perception. Kayleigh McEnany has been throwing Trump under the bus, whether purposefully or not, all week. I want you to see what she said about that. Eli Stokels, who's the White House reporter for the LA Times, said, Kayleigh McEnany then read it, saying it's, quote, directly from president. He spent a good bit of time working on that.
I mean, if you watch Kayleigh during these things, it is at times horrible, but now it's become more and more delicious to watch Kayleigh McEnany, because it is very clear she already hates her job.
Mm-hmm. Like, instantly.
She's not as good as Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who memorized those things,
mm-hmm.
who was way better at memorizing
and internalized now, it, really.
And it, yeah, and Kayleigh McEnany gets to a point in the press conferences now where she just goes, ugh. She, like, pulls it out and she, like, holds it up and she's like, it has been suggested that we should rename military base. And you see the hello, darkness, my old friend. And it's so interesting to watch all of his press secretaries reach that point, except for one, Hope Hicks, who was like, not gonna do it. Mm-hmm. Not gonna do it. Or they were just like, she is not good at all. Don't let her out there.
Yeah, I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders was the best, because to do this job, you have to not have anything inside you. You have to be a barren wasteland inside that doesn't care about truth or your reputation or have any shame or anything like that. The ones who failed, even Spicer, like, would laugh as he said some of these things. Like, he couldn't help but acknowledge the farce that he was a part of.
Well, Spicer, you could see, like, the gears frying and smoke coming out of his mm-hmm. ears. So there was a visual indication that something was wrong.
Yeah.
Kaylee's is now when she starts to read stuff, you know that she really doesn't agree with it. But Sarah Huckabee Sanders, I said this when she was when she replaced Spicer. It's like, now we're not, for her, we couldn't, it took more understanding of the issues to really understand what the crazy was that she was saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, look, we've made references to the fact that, you know, it's not just that they were Confederate, but on the merits, it doesn't necessarily make sense. I want to give you one example of that. And so here's a write-up from Alex Horton on the Washington Post about Fort Benning, which is in Georgia. He says, Fort Benning in Georgia, the home of Army infantry and airborne training, is named after Brigadier General Henry Benning, who led troops at Antietam and Gettysburg. In remarks in 1861, laying out slavery as the reason for secession. Remember, like, now they pretend that wasn't the reason. They weren't pretending at the time. Benning warned that abolition would lead to, quote, black governors, black legislatures, black juries, black everything. Is it to be supposed that the white race will stand for that? That's the person that the base is named for in Georgia. The guy who's like, we're just going to allow black stuff to be around?
No, I have a solution. We don't have to change the name Fort Benning, but we do have to change the whole name if it's Fort Henry Benning. It will now be Fort Annette Benning because she's a national treasure. When she was in charge, the kids were all right.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she did have trouble. She married Bugsy, Warren Beatty, but he's gorgeous still. He's 900 years old, but we should call it Fort Annette Benning.
Okay.
And well, Fort we're... Not to Brag.
Fort Not to Brag. What do you got for Keep Hood, it. Man? What do you got for Hood?
Fort Hoodie.
Fort, okay.
It's just a casual. It's a casual.
Fort Pop Your Hood. I don't know. Look, we have other, like, if you're going to name it after heroes from the military, I think we can come up with other ones. How about we name it for people who fought on the winning side in the Civil War? How about that? There were some. Some of these leaders, like, literally the names are for people who were removed from their positions in the Confederate military during the Civil War because they were failures then. They lost their jobs because they were bad at them. And then we turn around and say, oh, no, we should definitely remember them for the next 155 years. It's madness.
So ridiculous. And this and the Confederate monuments, it's just proof that the Union won the Civil War but surrendered during Reconstruction.
True. Sad but true. Oh, also, I should probably mention, supposedly, wait for this news to be, you know, like preempted by them surrendering. But supposedly, the Republican-led Senate Armed Services Committee has reportedly defied President Donald Trump and has adopted a resolution to push for the renaming of American military bases that were named after Confederate generals. I don't know if they can actually do that without Trump being able.
I didn't mean to throw that up. In 3 years. I thought it was like within 3 years.
Yes. It might not happen at all, and he could theoretically strike it down. Although I would assume that if he loses in November, that's one thing that could probably change. We have a million heroes. Name it. Anyway. Okay.
Do like Captain America.
The Steve Rogers base. That's what you want? Yes. I say go for it. Name after Tony Stark. Come on. Dude made weapons. Within the last week, the Lincoln Project, that thorn in Trump's side, made an ad about the fact that Donald Trump and his base seems to still really love the Confederate flag. That has since become a big topic of conversation as the Confederate general named bases have become such a big thing. And so I want to show you this ad, and I'm curious, for you watching at home, and for Brett as well, do you think that this is an effective line of attack? Take a look.
The men who followed this flag 150 years ago knew what it meant. Treason against their country. The death of the United States. America defeated the men who followed that flag. Those with honor surrendered and cast it aside forever. So why does it keep showing up today at events supporting Donald Trump? And why does he call the folks who carry it very fine people?
I think there's blame on both sides, but you also had people that were very fine people.
What does it say that they're all in for Trump? What does it say that he won't condemn a flag of hate, division, and losers?
Will not replace us!
For us, it says this is a time for choosing America or Trump.
So, Brett, we've seen a lot of ads from them. We've liked a lot of ads from them. Is this an effective line of attack against Trump?
Yeah, I mean, is it an effective line of attack? I'm glad someone's attacking. And yeah, I don't know if it's it needs to be done. And I'm glad they're doing it. They could have sat out. And it seems to have buy-in from various other people, like NASCAR just banned it from their stuff, and the Marine Corps, but not the Air Force or something like that. One of the branches of the military banned it. So, yeah, I would like to get any remnants of it off of the state flags.
And that apparently is being discussed. I forget which state it is, but there is apparently discussion about that.
Mississippi, it's on the state flag. So it's like, why does it keep showing up? Well, it's on the Mississippi state flag. Is one of the places you could probably find it. And that's the state flag. And they added it a long time ago. And then, as I said, probably a million times on your show, like the Georgia, it's not officially there, but the layout is the same as the stars and bars, like the not the battle flag with the X on it, but the one with the circle is still there. And it's a nightmare.
Yeah, look,
but I think everyone needs to start coming out with this to remind folks that the reason that they have that flag is because of they like slavery and what it implies about races.
Yeah, I don't know how effective it's going to be. It might be that there are some. I mean, look, obviously, like Dems like these ads, and you know, people on the left. I like these ads because they hit him, and because it so clearly bothers Trump. How effective they are in actually changing people's mind, I don't know. Maybe some Republicans who were theoretically going to sit out because they hate everything might turn against Trump because they hate everything. I think that's possible. He's making it easier to make that case again for some of these Republicans who might not like Trump. He's really pissing them off just constantly. In terms of the actual like the focus on the flag, I think it's hard. You can get, you know, companies, like you can get NASCAR to not do the flag. There are always going to be some people, even the more rare it becomes, that for the rest of their lives they will wave it and think that it's some symbol of pride or whatever. As an outsider, we can see that, my God, do you have to really be nostalgic for that time to have taken up... Because again, that flag wasn't... It's not like that flag has been used in the South constantly. It was gone for decades before it came back with racists saying, looking for these symbols. And some of the statues that are getting knocked down, when they were talked about being taken out or when they're being knocked down, the call is, this is our history. We need to remember these things. But some of these statues were put in, like there was a tweet, it was like one statue was put in after the third season of Seinfeld or something. Like it's not like this was our history. It's like these were calls to nostalgia.
Now, let's talk about what Tucker Carlson was saying just the other day and probably is saying right now in a staff meeting. Mm-hmm. His argument is that white people should not be held responsible because someone in their family, part of their heritage, created racism, mm-hmm. right? And the sins of the fathers should not be borne out on the sons. Okay, that's his argument. But what if there were sons who are actively seeking out symbols to show that they support those sins of their fathers? That's exactly what this is. So when they go out and they get that flag, they have put down the benefit of the doubt and taken up the mantle of hatred and white supremacy.
Yeah.
So they're not out of jail free anymore.
Yeah, that is a very good point. Probably needless analogy. It's like so let's say my dad had brutally murdered a bunch of people and people judged me for that, even though I hadn't done it. That would be wrong. But like, what if I constantly posted photos of the crime scene all over the place? That'd be kind of weird. Like, maybe then there is actually something about me. So anyway, great point, Brett.
It's the battle flag. I do want to say that it is not. Both of them are bad, but this is the violent one. The one with the X is one. Battle flag.
Yeah,
the other one is just a symbol of treason. This one is killing people for the treason.
And you have the, like, be one of the people who just annoyingly puts the American flag on everything. It's not like you don't have a flag and you say you're proud of it. You swear you're proud of it. But then you're like, screw that. I don't like that anymore. I want this battle one from the people who tried to destroy that one. Just use the American flag, you idiot, or your state flag. There are so many flags that actually... are about your history and heritage and all of that stuff. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it.
You can put up Confederate monuments, but they have to be wearing a dunce cap or like peeing themselves or hitting themselves. Maybe that's my compromise.
Mm-hmm. Like you can have like the, you know, they have that one of the head of the KKK, but he has to be accidentally hitting himself with the balls of the baseball bat. How about that?
I don't know, the Nathan Bedford Forrest monument that someone erected like on his own property that's made of like the craziest looking metals is pretty embarrassing in and of itself. That's the only one I like because it looks so stupid.
The protests that we're seeing in cities across the country were sparked by the deaths of George Floyd as well as the deaths of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor. And those are all things that we're focusing quite a bit on. But we're also seeing come to light in recent weeks other deaths of people under police custody, and the details of some of those are truly shocking. And I want to welcome onto the show right now a candidate who has been calling for more transparency in some of the aspects of one of these deaths, the deaths of Javier Ambler. Joining us on the show now is a congressional candidate for the 31st District of Texas, Dr. Christine Edeman. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So this was a death that happened in Austin. I don't know to what extent it's yet national news, but can you fill us in a bit on what makes this case sort of unique and what you're calling for as a candidate?
Yeah, there's several aspects to this case that are troubling. The gentleman in question who died under police custody was pursued because his bright lights were on, and that was the reason for the pursuit. And he was pursued through Austin and into Williamson County, which is one of the counties that I will be representing when I am elected. And when police got him out of his car, they were insisting that he was resisting arrest. He was explaining to them that he has a health condition called congestive heart failure. They tased him multiple times. They told him, or he kept telling them, he couldn't breathe, that he had congestive heart failure. They continued to tase him and insist that he was resisting arrest. And I have to say that when you can't breathe, you would appear that you are resisting arrest when all you're trying to do is breathe and getting your body into a position where you can breathe. And so the further thing that makes this case really a little bit different is it was filmed by Live PD. Our sheriff's department had a contract with Live PD a few years ago, and this incident was found on tape. It was filmed, and the tapes were purged. We're learning now that the Live PD tapes don't exist. We have body cam footage of what was happening. There is an investigation going on. The investigation just came to light, and the community has just found out exactly how bad of a situation this was.
Wow. And so obviously there's some similarities. The fact that he was struggling for his life, he was telling them he can't breathe as he was dying while they're restraining him. I mean, the fact that the show was filming alongside, that it took so long for footage to come out, because we should point out that this death happened slightly more than a year ago.
Right.
That, again, it's taking so long for details to come out, which we've seen in some other cases as well. But I guess there's no way for us to know what the alternative angle of the footage of the Live PD would have shown. I would guess that if it confirmed everything the police were saying, it probably wouldn't have been destroyed at this point. I know that that's speculation, but is that how you feel?
You know, my position is, if you are a police officer or a sheriff's deputy and you have someone in custody and they're telling you that they cannot breathe, that would be, and you don't stop doing what you're doing that is making them not be able to breathe, that's no different than if I'm holding a pillow over your face and you're telling me you can't breathe. That is manslaughter at least, murder at most likely. And it's unacceptable that the people involved have not been arrested, that our sheriff has still remained in office. We are calling for his resignation immediately. He is up for re-election in November. That's too long to wait. This is the last in a long string of incidences that are very concerning with this sheriff. And we are asking for his immediate resignation, along with most of the Democrats in this district and one of the Republican county commissioners.
And, you know, I wanted to talk about your background is as a physician, which gives you a different perspective on some aspects of this case and cases like it. I know that you took issue with some of what you saw in the autopsy report in this case, correct?
Yes, it is unacceptable to not be very clear that this man wouldn't have died if he hadn't been treated this way under police custody. Just because you have a pre-existing medical condition doesn't mean it's okay to put you in a position that is going to hasten your death. He would be walking around alive. And these autopsy reports, both his and George Floyd's, are raising all sorts of red flags in the medical community. We are discussing this behind the scenes about how autopsy reports are coming out that don't explain that, sure, people have underlying conditions. All of us, almost all of us do. But the reason that he died is because of the treatment at the hands of the sheriff's deputies.
Yeah. You know, and so, yeah, I want to thank you for talking about this case. It's, people need to know about this, especially considering the time we're in. But I know you also, as we introduced you, you are a congressional candidate. You're facing a runoff primary on July 14th. That date was pushed back because of the pandemic, the other situation that affects all this. So, in terms of the large, like zooming back a little bit, issues like this, I know that you're calling for the sheriff to resign. If you find yourself in Congress, what is going to be your approach to these sorts of issues? What would you like to see done nationally?
What we are doing is elevating the voices of people who have been doing the work on police reform for a long time. One of those people is Samuel Sinyangwe, and we are in favor of the reforms that he talks about, which is demilitarizing the police, making sure that these police contracts that are through the police unions are revisited, making sure that there are alternatives to 911 calls for medical for mental health issues. It falls under the umbrella of what people are saying when they say defund the police. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way to take the resources that are being used by police departments and reallocate those resources into community projects that will make all of us safer. It's been done before. It was done in Camden, New Jersey with great success. Not only did police violence go down, but so did crime in that area. So these are proven methods to make everybody safer, including every community, and to reduce police violence.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for sketching out your platform in that area. Mm-hmm. If people would like more details about your campaign, where can they find that?
It's Christine4Congress.com.
Awesome. And that is the 31st District of Texas. Dr. Christine Edeman, thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.